Hey, welcome everyone. Whenever you're watching this or whatever day you're watching this, you're very welcome. Today, I have with me to talk about beer, I have Tom Ross and Houston Lett from Bastet Brewing in Florida. And it's quite interesting. It's an Egypt-themed brewery, which I think is quite an interesting concept. As you'll discover, they have a lot of interest in the history of brewing, which comes through a lot in what they're doing and both in their tap rooms, in their brewery name, and in kind of the range of beers they're brewing. So, guys, thanks a million for joining me.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
It's a pleasure. So maybe we should start. I mean, like I said, there's so much we could talk to with you, but maybe we just start with the two of you. How did you get together and decide to open a brewery?
Yeah. So, Houston and I have known each other for 23 years now, 24 maybe. Back in when we first met, both of us were working at a local law firm here in downtown Tampa, Florida. And I was in the IT department. Houston was in the marketing department. During working together in those years, the two of us, Houston was there for 20 years, I was there for 15. During those years, we figured out that both of us were interested in beer.
Right.
And we founded a local homebrewing club during those years. We used to have beer 30 days at the law firm, where we would invite the entire staff of the law firm, which was something like, what, 400 people, Houston, to come to a conference room or our office, and we would share beers that we'd gathered, or made ourselves. So, it was in those years that the two of us met and discovered our mutual love of beer. And years after both of us leaving that law firm, we started Bastet Brewing.
Well, I mean, it's a big step though, from going from, like, you're leaving your job, like you said, you've been there for a full career, and brewing beer, to making the decision to jump into a commercial brewery. Like, I mean, that, how did that come about? Were you talking about it for a long time? Was it a thing of, look, we're just both sick of this and we're just going to go ahead for it? Or what made the jump? It's a big step.
It was a big step. You want to talk a bit about that, Houston?
Yeah, sure. During that journey that Tom and I were on, during the homebrew time, we were brewing a lot of beers, delving into many different styles. And, when we ended up leaving the firm, it was a buyout, basically. Firm got bought out. Tom and I got laid off from our departments. And we were talking about, committing to this more seriously. So that kind of ignited us to go look for a job in the professional space. That's what we ended up doing. Yeah. So another gentleman of ours, a friend of ours, was in the club. He ended up going to work for a local craft brewery here. Then Tom followed, and then I followed Tom. So actually, out of the 10 guys that, co-founded this homebrew club, four of us went professional. So we got in a professional space from a local brewery here. It's actually one of the ones that kind of ignited us. It was Cigar City Brewing. We learned a lot there. I mean, our first year alone, we probably learned just as much as we did homebrewing collectively. It was a wealth of knowledge. So during that time, Tom and I were continuing doing the homebrew stuff, doing festivals, and we're getting pretty good at it. So that was what gave us the motivation to entertain doing it professionally on our own.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, like that homebrewing, and yeah, like, was it, all about recipes you learned more, or was it just to deal with larger equipment and deal with larger?
All of the above. I mean, we learned a lot about equipment, different uses of equipment, how to not kill yourself. We learned a lot about recipe development. We learned a lot about barrel work, things that weren't even in our scope. That's what I mean about we learned a tremendous amount of things in a short period of time. We're kind of fully immersed into the industry. And, you know, Tom and I are pretty quick studies. So we learned a lot really quickly. And we also, had the opportunity of having, the responsibility of producing a lot more wort than we were doing in our garage. You know, we went from a one barrel system to a 30 barrel system. So, we learned a lot about scaling up, cellarman knowledge. It's just all facets of the industry we learned, and it was just at our fingertips. So right. we soaked it in like a sponge, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
and these were really during the golden years for the rise of craft beer in right. Central Florida as well. Cigar City was growing enormously during those years, and we were lucky to be there during that time. And they're now a worldwide brand, of course, making award-winning beer. So we were working in an award-winning brewery in its golden years. We were lucky to be there during that time, and we were working with some great guys, some incredibly knowledgeable beer people that were happy to pass on what they'd learned over the years. So it was a really good time.
So that was back around what time? A year?
2015, around that time.
Okay, I don't really have a picture of, how it's progressed in Florida. So it was just kind of taking off at that stage, was it? The whole craft beer, or it was...
It had already taken off. Cigar City, I believe they were birthed in 2009. By 2015, they were full steam ahead, man. It was, the brewery had taken off like a rocket, and things were moving fast.
Right.
So yeah, at that point, they were a household name at that point.
Okay. So it wasn't, like you said, it was a sweet spot. It wasn't a startup where you were kind of, you'd still be learning a lot, but it was still small enough that you could learn everything. It was just in that spot. So that was handy. So then you went from there. You were there for what, about 10 years? If I remember you, no, less. That was 2015. So you opened in...
Actually, when I started brewing and cellaring at Cigar City, I told him in my job interview that I had the goal of opening my own brewery. And they said, yeah, that's fine. Come on in and work with us anyway. We'd be happy to have you. And so 2014 is when Houston and I incorporated Bastet Brewing. I was at Cigar City for 5 years until I couldn't really do that job anymore because we were so busy with opening Bastet Brewing, okay. Which, we leased our space in October of 2019 and we opened November of 2020.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say it's the worst time to open, but maybe he was even a couple of months. It would have been worse if it was a couple of months earlier even.
Man, when I get in that conversation with people, I always say I couldn't have consciously picked a worse time to open a small business. But, it wasn't by choice. We leased the space in October 2019. COVID started in China in November 2019. We were in a lease. I couldn't just say to my landlord, oh, just kidding, man. we don't want to move forward. So we we've been doing the best that we can with the crappy cards that we were dealt, because COVID changed everything.
If that was November 2020, is the brewery in the, it is in the tap room, is it? The tap room and the brewery are together?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Yeah, we have a 2,700 square foot space, and the brewery, the tap room is about 1,100 square feet of that, and the rest is the brew house and cooler. You can see the brewery through our, we have a window peeking into the brew house.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking, the only thing I've seen is, I went on Google Maps to see where you were and all that, the look around. So from the outside, to be honest, I'd walk past. I wouldn't notice at all. But inside, then it is completely different. So I'm wondering, do you get, even the neighborhood, do you get people coming in now directly to you, or are you still very neighborhood focused, like that people need to know you're there? Or because it looks like a strip, it looks like it could be, it's one shop here. There is no indication apart from the name that it could be a brewery with a really interesting tap room in it.
Yeah, so the location is definitely a bit of a challenge for us. We are in a three-suite strip. We're right in the smack dab in the middle, between Cabinets to Go and Subway. Bastet is on the signage out front, but then we have a marquee that says Craft Brewery to try to rope people in. We're in close proximity to some of our peers. We're right down the street from Coppertail, which is a ginormous facility, just off the road on the other side of 60. And then we're right around the corner from Berry House, which that's helped us a lot. They send people our way, we send people their way. We do have a neighborhood way back behind us. It's called Palmetto Beach. But honestly, we don't get a ton of foot traffic, so we're kind of a destination.
Okay.
The area in general, though, we're just south of a very popular touristy type area called Ybor City. It's sort of like Tampa's own Bourbon Street from New Orleans.
Okay.
And we're just a stone's throw from downtown Tampa, which is growing tremendously fast. Several apartment buildings have been built during the time of our tenancy, and this area is growing tremendously fast. Big real estate investors, local guys, have started enormous projects around us. So I think we're well placed in the community, but the space is still sort of nondescript.
Right. But you seem to be doing well. You seem to be known, you seem to be getting people in there. So is it the same people coming back? You mentioned that you get referrals from the other breweries now, which is one of the things I really like about talking to people in the industry. It really is the craft business doesn't seem to see itself as in competition with each other. It's in competition against the macro, so everybody's helping each other. So how have you seen it since you opened in November 2020, when presumably you had nobody? So how's it been going since?
It's been a challenge. We had no grand opening because we opened in November 2020. The first big COVID peak in Florida was December. There are a couple ways you can think about the placement of your brewery, right? You can put it in an area where there are no other breweries and you're the only game around. You can put it in an area where there are couple of other breweries around and it becomes a destination where people go brewery hop.
Yeah.
And of course we chose the latter, and I think we earned the respect of our peers relatively quick. Houston is a fantastic brewer, and just recently we entered our first beer competition. We, you know, entering beers into competition hasn't been all that important to us, but we did that recently. And in our first competition entries, we won an award for a beer. So, you know, I think we've earned the respect of our peers, and people come in from all over the world, really, literally. I hear all the time, I'm a traveler from, you know, Dublin, I'm a traveler from wherever. I'm one of those people that goes to the breweries wherever I visit. I've visited several breweries around here, and you guys are the best. Right. I hear it all the time, man. You know, we, I think it's for several reasons. We're doing things a little bit differently than other breweries around. You know, if we start talking about some of the paths to alcoholic fermentation, you know, later on in this conversation, we've chosen a couple of them, you know, because of our interest in the history of brewing. And how beer was brewed in ancient times, we offer something a little bit different than most breweries do.
Right. Yeah, that's something like, I mean, it is very easy, I suppose, you know, in one sense that breweries can just produce all the same beers and it's, you know, you just have a different brand. But how do you differentiate that? I mean, since you brought it up there, I mean, you have this focus on Egypt, and also just looking at, I mean, the range of beers you have, there's some quite unique stuff in there. So how do you decide what you're going to brew? Maybe we can go back a step, sorry, before we get to the beers themselves. How did you decide the whole Egypt? Like, where did that interest come in? And how did you decide to make that the focus of the brewery, like the design? And then maybe we can get around to how that influences the beers themselves.
Yeah, so really, it stemmed from Houston and I and our interest in the history of beer. We're big fans of the history of beer. And, you know, the ancient Egyptians were the first large-scale beer brewing culture on Earth. Beer existed before ancient Egypt, but they really took it to the next level. And they have stories in their mythology related to beer. And one of those stories has Bastet in it. But I'd like to preface, before I tell that story, I'd like to talk a little bit about the way ancient Egyptians viewed their gods and whatnot. So, and I'm no expert in Egyptology, but I've had an interest in it for a very long time. So, you know, as the Egyptian Empire developed, you know, local tribes joined each other, and eventually Upper and Lower Egypt joined to create the Egyptian Empire. And during all of this, you know, as one local tribe had one god and another local tribe had another god, as they joined together, these gods often were combined, and sometimes you even ended up with hyphenated god names, but the characteristics of these gods sort of melded together. So you had multiple gods with multiple personalities that represented multiple things. And Bastet was sort of in a group of those gods. So in the story that I'm about to tell, the Eye of Ra is referenced. And the Eye of Ra typically was represented by three or four different gods, including Bastet, Sekhmet, and Hathor. Bastet was the Egyptian cat goddess. She had the head of a cat and the body of a woman. Her primary characteristics really were of a mothering nature. You know, cats had a lot of kittens and took very good care of their kittens. They were, you know, nurturing and mothering. But also in ancient Egypt, you had lions, right? So Bastet could transform into a goddess called Sekhmet, who had the head of a lion and the body of a woman. And she was the vengeful, violent, bloodthirsty version of that god, of the Eye of Ra, that was sort of the tool of vengeance. You know, she would go out and do his dirty work. So the story I'm going to tell is related to beer, but it's not entirely about beer. Really, the story comes from a text called the Book of the Heavenly Cow. And that story is primarily about the people uprising against Ra and how he dealt with that uprising. So the story goes that Ra is the pharaoh in Egypt at the time, and he's getting a little older, and he feels like people don't respect him sufficiently anymore. Calls out, hang on 1 second. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
So, let me start that over again. So, Ra is the pharaoh in Egypt at the time, and he's getting a little older, and he feels like people don't respect him sufficiently anymore. Sorry guys, my screen is messing up.
All right, okay, no problem. So Houston, is this something that everybody who comes into the brewery gets to hear?
Yes, we share this story all the time. Just because it's cool folklore that people get it once we explain that, and you know, it's just one more layer to why we chose our theme and you know, the passion behind the theme.
Yeah. Like how important is that? Like I was saying, or I was trying to hint at, or kind of somehow coalesce earlier, like breweries can be very much the same. It's just the branding, but you know, you can also have that branding actually mean something, which it seems like in this case it is. I mean, you know, it's not just a brand for the sake of a brand. It is something that you're passionate about.
Absolutely. Honestly, just from the history that Tom and I know about, you know, Egyptians and brewing, we're pretty surprised that there isn't any other breweries that are open with a theme. But that also validates our reasoning for choosing it, and you know, just making people aware of the history. So,
right. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I'm back.
Okay. No problem. Continue.
So Ra's getting older, and he feels like people don't respect him sufficiently anymore. So he calls out the Eye of Ra, or his tool of vengeance, to go destroy humanity for not respecting him sufficiently. So he tells Bastet to go out and start killing everybody. So she goes out, she starts killing everyone. And the other gods point out to Ra that as soon as everybody's dead, nobody worships him. And he says, oh, yeah, I guess that was a bad idea. So he calls her back. But she's been out killing everybody, and she's in this bloodlust, and she won't stop. So Ra takes 7,000 jugs of beer, and he uses pomegranate juice or ochre or something to turn it red. And he pours it out in front of her, and she thinks it's blood. So she drinks it, she gets drunk, she falls asleep, and she stops killing everybody. So, you know, the short takeaway from that is that, you know, beer saved the world.
Right.
But, you know, it was part of Egyptian society. Beer and bread, you know, developed at the same time all throughout Mesopotamia and Egypt. And, you know, beer was just part of their daily routines. Beer was used as currency. Beer was used as payment for workers. You know, when the pyramids in Egypt were being built, the workers, a lot of people think they were slaves. This is not true. Workers that were working on the pyramids in Egypt were paid in rations of beer. So beer was a very important part of their society, as it was all throughout Mesopotamia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the part of the, I think, general belief now is that, you know, beer came first. That's what led to agriculture, not bread. I think that's becoming pretty widely accepted now.
You know, I'm not a subscriber to that. The way I see it, you know, in early times when humans were hunter-gatherers, these hunter-gatherers went out and they collected whatever they could to eat, right? And a lot of the times in these areas, Mesopotamia and Egypt, it was grains, right? So they were taking maybe a container out to wander and gather and pick grains and find whatever they could to eat and take it back to wherever they were settling. And, you know, because humans didn't really invent beer, we just discovered it. You know, you can imagine that in this whatever container they were using to collect their grains, you know, if water got into that vessel, those grains would start sprouting, you know, and shortly thereafter, they would start fermenting. And, you know, you ended up with people stumbling upon fermentation and what was ancient beer. But, you know, as these societies developed and the hunter-gatherers became farmers and people settled into farming communities, you know, then you started seeing the collection of grains on a large scale. And you have to imagine at some point that those grains possibly got wet. You know, they've got a big store of grains that got wet. That stuff sprouts and starts fermenting, you know. So I don't think beer came first. I think the whole argument of whether beer and bread, you know, which was first is a chicken and an egg sort of story where they developed together, you know, and even later in the development, when you start seeing these dioramas that the ancient Egyptians made of breweries, beer breweries and bakeries, there's this one diorama. I posted about it recently on our Facebook page, where there is an ancient brewery and bakery under the same roof, and they're making beer and bread together. So I kind of view it as, you know, these people recognized fermentation early on, but didn't understand it, right? But clearly by, you know, 3500 BC, even 4000 BC, people were already harnessing real understanding of fermentation and making wort. That was a huge, important step. Yeah. When those ancient people were making wort and not just accidentally fermenting something. You know, you've got these breweries all up and down the Nile. Well, not really. They were mostly in the area of Luxor. There are four different sites where ancient breweries were located, the oldest of which was a place called Hierakonpolis, and that brewery there was dated to something like 3500 BC, and they were making beer in these huge clay containers that they heated purposely to produce wort. And then that wort was taken into another vessel where the fermentation happened. So, you know, 3500 BC, you've already got an operating brewery happening.
Right, yeah.
And there were several others found in 2020. They uncovered another brewery, I believe it was in Abydos. And that one, the Ministry of Antiquities estimated that based on the number and the size of the vessels they uncovered there, they were making 22,000 liters of beer on that site. You know, our brewery is 587 liters. They were doing 22,000 liters. But at this point in ancient Egyptian history, beer was super important to them. It was used as an offering to the gods. It was used as currency. It was part of their daily life, and there are all kinds of sayings, you know, about beer. It's clearly in their culture in a huge way at that time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, my knowledge of ancient Egypt is, I suppose, just about the same as everyone else's. You know, I have a very basic knowledge, and I know just the points. But I mean, you obviously know more, so I'm going to ask you this, and if you don't know, it doesn't matter. But a lot of the thing about beer and that seems to be that, you know, I mean, even up to modern days or relatively recently, there's a spiritual side to it. You know, it's an offering. And like you said, but if you have a brewery that size, like I said, do you have any concept of where that broke down kind of and stopped becoming a very spiritual, sacramental thing and became an everyday occurrence? Was it both at the same time? Do you know? Is there any evidence on it?
It probably developed over time. You know, they had gods completely dedicated to beer. You know, Osiris, Tenenet was the goddess of beer and brewing. So surely it developed over time for them. But again, you know, even by 3500, 4000 BC, beer had already become super popular, not just in Egypt, but all throughout Mesopotamia as well. You know, I think one of the earliest evidence of brewing goes back 13,000 years already to the Natufians, I believe they were called, which was on the west side of the Mediterranean in, I think, what's now Israel. There was a cave where they found some grain and some residue of a brewing process.
Yeah.
You know, so even this evidence of beer goes even way back before the ancient Egyptians.
Yeah, which is back to, yeah, just after the Ice Age or just towards the end. But so like you obviously have all this passion that both of you on this, you know, Egypt and beer. So which do you think, which came first in the theme of the brewery? Like, were you more fascinated with Egypt, led you into discovering more about their use of beer? Was it because you were more passionate about beer, you discovered this path in, or how did you merge the two and make it the theme of the brewery?
Go for it, Houston.
I mean, I think they both came together. I think it was kind of organically, to be honest with you. We both were interested. We had an interest in Egypt. We all both had an interest in beer. And I think it was kind of a no-brainer for us to make it the theme. One of the driving factors is that we didn't want to be any other pub, you know, with, you know, barrels and wood everywhere. We wanted to have something more unique So that kind of fell in line, to be honest with you. You know, we definitely didn't know as much as we do now. We've done a deep dive, learning more and more every day about it. You know, we definitely know more than the average bear, but we continue to learn more and more every day. You know, just like Tom mentioned earlier about the Ministry of Antiquities, you know, we learn that throughout our journey, and we continue to learn more and more stuff that's being discovered in Egypt. And it falls right in line with what we're trying to do here.
Right. Yeah. Like I said to you earlier, I think just before we came on, that that's how I kept this going. I started talking to people during COVID as well. And but yeah, beer is just this fascinating way to kind of learn more about ancient history, about ancient cultures, and also modern history and cultures. Like, it's a fascinating route into whatever you want to discover. It just threads through everything. And that's why I'm still, that's why I'm talking to you today, because it just led me to my journey to talk to you. So
I got to tell you, Brian, I'm a big fan of your podcast, man. When you emailed us, I had never heard of it, but, I went to your website and I saw some of the people you've been interviewing, and I watched, quite a few of your podcast, man. And you've talked to some incredible people who have some great insight into the history of beer. You're doing a great thing here, man. And, I admire it.
Right. But I mean, I'm just doing it, like I said, because I just found like there was this way to just discover, learn a lot more stuff. And so, I mean, it's not huge or anything, but, it's a nice hobby for me, which is,
I completely agree with Tom, and I did the same thing. I started looking at some of your past episodes, and really, really impressive. The people that you talked to, and I'm actually honored that you thought of us to be included.
Well, thank you. I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky that people just keep replying and giving me their time. You know, nothing more than that. Just. People gave me their time, but
keep it up.
All right, I will, as long as people will talk to me. But Betty, so the beer, I mean, let's talk with the beer itself. So I mean, you have quite a wide range of beers. You're not, you know, that there's an amazing range of what you're doing in styles, and also the ingredients you're using. It's that, I presume that's deliberate, like you're deliberately trying to make it as wide as possible, or is it just as you come along with an idea, something jumps into your head and you decide, let's give that a try? Or?
Yeah. So, you know, Tom and I tackle recipe development a little differently than other breweries. You know, we can brew just about any style you can think of. We do some conventional brewing. We also do some non-conventional brewing. You know, Tom and I have a broad background in food. When it comes to, let me rephrase that. It's not that we've worked in food. It's just he and I both are you know, foodies. You know, we're big into food, and we're both pretty good cooks. And so essentially, I think of brewing as you're basically a chef with malted barley and grain. It's the same difference, you know. You know, your choice of ingredient from raw ingredient up until like adjuncts added later. You know, we take inspiration from a lot of different things. You know, my saying is, you can eat all over the world, so why can't you drink all over the world? You know, and that's kind of how we tackle recipe development. I personally take inspiration at markets, especially Asian markets, Indian markets, open air markets. You know, you find some really cool, unique ingredient. Our approach on it, though, is to use unique ingredient, but with a purpose, you know, not for the sake of just throwing everything into the kitchen sink in a beer. You know, everything that we do is very purposeful. We also take inspiration in what other people are fermenting around the world as well. You know, one of our popular beers here is Tom's brainchild. It's called Ole Tepache. It's a pineapple fermented drink based out of Mexico. Tom flipped it on its ear, and he added ginger and cardamom, which is an amazing combination. We've done the Finnish inspired beer. It's fermented lemonade. It's called Sima. In Finland, at the turn of spring, everyone makes it in their home. It's usually made with, so what you do is you pulverize the entire lemon, the skin, the pith, the seeds, everything. You mix it with water, sugar, you put it in a swing top bottle with yeast. You throw a couple raisins in it. The raisins are not for flavor. It's to let you know when fermentation's done. So basically the raisins dance around in the glass, while fermentation's happening. When fermentation's done, it sits, on the surface of the liquid. And that's commonly done in Finland. We've done that. We've also done a strawberry raspberry version of that. And we've also done a navel orange one with just orange. So we wanted to kind of floaterize it, you know. We've done kvass, you know, we've done millet beers. So our interest is all over the world when it comes to our recipe development. Sure, we can brew traditional things like, you know, a Pilsner and, you know, an amber ale or blonde. But, you know, we tackle some other interesting things. Another one of our popular beers is a ube beer. Meyer lemon is the base, and then we added ube yam. It's a purple yam. It's very common in Philippine cuisine.
Okay.
We also use Japanese yams in there. It looks like a sweet potato on the outside. When you peel it, it's white, but it's almost three times the sweetness of sweet potatoes. So we added those together and then rounded it off with some vanilla. It's electrically bright purple. It's a fun beer. People love it. So that's kind of our take on recipe development and just the creativity, some of the things that we've been creative with here with our recipes.
And is there anything that didn't work that she just said?
I can't think of right off the top of my head. I'm sure there was maybe a couple in there that, you know, but when they don't work, you just send them down the drain.
Yeah, that's tough though.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is I experiment with those beers on our one barrel system. So if they don't work, it's not a lot of beer to dump. We don't go aggressive like that on the big system. Okay. We'll start off on the smaller system.
You know, people ferment something all over the world on every continent. Well, probably except Antarctica, right? But, everywhere all over the world, people ferment something. And, you know, even today, we eat so many things that people have kind of forgotten maybe that they're fermented, or fermentation is part of their process along the way, mm-hmm. People ferment meats, obviously milk is a big one, right? Yogurt and kefir and all of this, chocolate, got a step in it where those pods that come out of cacao are fermented.
I only discovered that recently. That came as a shock to me.
Right. People don't realize how important fermentation is to so many things that we eat. So when you start trying to find inspiration for the next interesting ingredient to use in a brew, just go start reading something about another culture and what they ferment. Houston came to me recently and said, "Hey man, have you ever heard of this stuff called Mavi?" And I was like, "Nope." So tell them about that one, man.
Yeah. So Mavi is a really, cool, interesting beverage. It's basically fermented tea, but it's fermented from the bark of the Mabi tree. Mabi is M-A-U-B-Y. So this tea is drank up and down the Caribbean. It's very common in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico calls it Mavi, M-A-V-I, and that's where I actually got the idea from. I got the idea from my cousin's Puerto Rican husband. And he said, "Do you ever had this before?" I said, "No." And I made a mission to find some of this stuff. And it took me several months, but I finally found some, and it was amazing. You know, it's this, like I said, it's made with this tree bark. You steep it in hot liquid, hot water, sorry. And you add cinnamon and anise to it. And it's just very, it's sweet, refreshing, just a very interesting drink. And so we're actually, the first iteration is in the tank right now. We're doing a spin on it. So it's basically, it's going to be Mavi, but it's also going to be with Meyer Lemon as the base again. But it's essentially going to be a Mavi version of Arnold Palmer. You know, the lemonade and the sweet tea mixed. So super excited about that. It's coming along pretty good. I tasted some the other day. There's some things I'm going to add to it. But yeah, it's like I said, it's I think Puerto Rico, Jamaica, Dominican Republic. Those are some of the main places in the Caribbean that drink this tea on a daily basis.
Yeah. And like with all this stuff, it seems like you're full of ideas. Like, are you feeling do you feel under pressure that you have to come up with a new idea constantly? Or is it just, look, I don't have an idea today. We have all this stuff behind us and we still have to brew kind of our core range as well. Or do you feel under pressure that you have to come up with something new every month? Or
honestly, no. Tom and I both we think about ideas all the time. If anything, I'm having trouble squeezing my ideas in between the production of normal core beers. Right. I have so many ideas written down. I have a pad on my nightstand. I have a pad in my backpack, and I'm constantly writing ideas down. I have probably 20 beers that haven't even made it anywhere near the schedule yet. So yeah, ideas. I am not short of ideas. It's just squeezing them in to production time is the issue.
Yeah, no, I mean it's refreshing to hear it as well, because for so long, basically, like nearly all craft beer was just a different mix of hops this time, you know, and a different range of hops, and the base beer seemed to be the same, just different hops in it. Whereas now it's, I think you're not alone in it, but you're kind of, you know, a part of a smallish percentage of the craft beer market that is experimenting with more, I was going to say local ingredients, but they're not all local to you, but you know, different ingredients that are different and maybe different techniques and things like that. It's, you know, it's becoming a much more diverse kind of industry, I think.
Sure. So we've been blessed with, the ability to be super creative. You know, we have a small system. We only have a 5-barrel system here. I can do 6-barrel batches because of the headspace. So typically each batch is 186 gallons. That's on the big system. On the smaller system, you know, I can do 1-barrel. So we have the freedom to kind of play with a lot of different ingredient and not break the bank, essentially. You know, a lot of other production breweries can't do that. You know, what I need 5 pounds of, they probably need 50 to 100 pounds of. So we have that freedom. I also am cognizant of that, though, if one takes off, for us to be able to scale it up later. That's one of the benefits of Tom and I working at a production brewery. Being able to have that in mind of, hey, what if this thing really takes off? But right now, I'm honestly enjoying being able to play with some things and have fun with it. That's kind of what kept us going during our homebrew time, and that keeps me inspired here. And I think that's really important for me as a brewer to be able to constantly stay inspired.
Yep. excuse me. That brings up a question I meant to ask you. Is all your distribution through your tap room? Is itself that way? Do you have distribution out into markets or?
Yeah, no. So it's just tap room only. No distro. We were doing some small stuff here and there through a local company that shut down. So yeah, right now our sales are across the bar or out of our to-go cooler.
Okay.
You know, there are lots of different laws in each state for distribution in the U.S. Florida is not really great for small brewers like us. You know, our original plan was, and our business plan was made pre-COVID, keep that in mind. Our original plan was to just pour our beer out of the tap room for the first year, and then after year one, do some local distribution, you know, maybe a 10-mile radius, because we're a small brewery and we have no aspirations to become a cigar city or anything like that. That's not what we had in mind. We just wanted to be a small local brewery that was pouring beer for local community and make a modest living for ourselves doing something that we enjoyed. You don't get in beer at our level to become rich. It ain't going to happen ever. You do it for the love of beer, not for making a lot of money. So, but COVID, you know, really screwed all that up, and we still haven't gotten into distribution, because of the way the laws are, you know, the monetary aspect of it. You know, there's a decent, significant capital expense that goes along with getting into distribution, and contractual things that prevent us from doing that. You know, in the state of Florida, if you sign up with a distributor, which is necessary for you to put your beer in the market, that relationship is for life. You're signed up with that distributor for life.
I heard that recently. I've talked to someone in Alabama. It's the same.
So if that relationship is not good for the brewery in any way, it's very difficult to get out of it. So, you know, for a couple of reasons, we have held off from going in from distributing our beers.
Right. Yeah, it's weird the way things change, because the big complaint here in Ireland is that, you know, it seems to be easy enough to distribute, but you can't open a tap room. It's next to impossible to open a tap room, but you can distribute outside. But then, you know, and everybody's saying, but the tap room is kind of your core. That's how you meet your customers. That's where you control it and have the greatest margins. So each country, each state is just a bit bizarre on its own level.
Right.
But I mean, it does give you, like, having that tap room, like, do you have, I know we said it's not really kind of a community in the sense of, you know, a neighborhood thing, but do you have people coming back regularly or?
Certainly. Yeah, we've got some fantastic regulars. You know, we've made lots of friends and certainly, any small business, 75% of your business is from your regulars, you know. Yeah. They've been great supporters for us, yes.
And have they know the whole of ancient Egyptian history by now? Or is this like, is your market the whole of Egyptologist beer lovers? Is that your core market?
No, you know, most people come in and, you know, their first question is, why the Egyptian theme? You know, nobody has any idea why we chose our theme, but that gives us an opportunity to start conversation.
Yeah.
You know, we we value having conversation with customers. Houston and I work behind the bar. We're the only two employees for Bastet Brewing. We do everything. We brew the beer, we run the business, and we work behind the bar. So when people come in and ask that question, you know, one, we have a story to tell them. Well, you know, Bastet beer was important to ancient Egypt. There's a story in their mythology related to beer. We tell the story about Bastet, where the name came from. And we start talking about the history of beer, you know, and people leave saying, "Ah, you guys have great beer, and I got a history lesson." So, you know, it's it sets us apart from other people. You know, beer brings people together and is all about conversation, and we value that. We enjoy talking to the people that come in and telling them, you know, where our inspiration came for this particular beer, or talking about the theme or the history of beer, all these things. You know, we don't have loud music in the tap room. We like for people to sit around and talk to each other and not, you know, try to scream at each other over loud music or, you know, get distracted by sports and stuff like that. We'd rather have a discussion with everyone.
No,
people are also excited about that theme as well. Just to add to what Tom said, you know, our tap room is full of tapestries that we've actually purchased. There's also a lot of tapestries that came from Egypt that people have brought in and given to us. We have actually one couple brought us a bunch of currency. They lived there for 2 years. They brought a bunch of currency that Tom put in the shadow box. They have one of our regulars made a needle point of our actual cat, of the Sphinx. They are not only super excited once we tell them the story, but they're also jazzed about giving us stuff to kind of help decorate the place.
Right. Well, I mean, doesn't sound like you can ask for much more, really, can you? I mean, that means you're striking a chord with them, definitely, no matter what else. And then the beer. So, yeah, then the beer on top of that, I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's a perfect combination. Because I did see, again, on the pictures, like, yeah, I saw some of those tapestries, but you also got some other kind of more pop art work as well, and that there's some really nice artwork there.
Yeah, we chose some things that, you know, have some of the various Egyptian gods on them. You know, we have a couple of things that came from the Book of the Dead. You know, it was an important document. Houston's going to show it to you right there. So that image comes from the ancient Egyptian Book of the Dead. And there's a whole story that goes along with that, which I love telling people. You know, when they start looking around and seeing these decorations, I can tell them about what's going on in that particular image, and talk to them about the gods that are in it and what those gods represent. It's, of course, interesting to me. You know, I gained that admiration of ancient Egyptian mythology a very, very long time ago, before I ever knew ancient Egyptians had anything to do with beer. You know, just Egyptian mythology was interesting to me. Yeah. And the more I read, the more I became interested. You know, there's some pretty wild mythology that they had.
Yeah, I think I think ancient Egypt just fascinates everyone. I mean, there's a thing that I only read recently, and, you know, I guess I always knew it, but I mean, Cleopatra, you know, with ancient, you know, so on, but like the Great Pyramids were built, like, she lived 2,000 years ago, and the Great Pyramids are 2,500 years before she was born. Like, it's just the scale of time is just, it kind of blows your mind, when at least that blew my mind, even though if I'd stopped to think about it, it was obvious, you know.
Yeah, Cleopatra, she was near the end of the Egyptian Empire.
She was Greek,
empire.
Basically.
And, you know, and if you want to start, you know, the unification of northern and southern empires in Egypt happened somewhere around 3150 BC, I think is the date, under one of the first rulers called Narmer. But clearly, smaller tribes or cities of Egyptians existed well before that. When you think about it, ancient Egyptian history lasted a good 4,000 years, where there were significant numbers of people gathering together and creating cities and farming along the Nile and all that. It boggles the mind, modern history, we've hardly even, scratched a couple thousand, much less the 4,000 that they went through.
Yeah, like I said, it's just, like I said, it's obvious if you stop thinking about it, but like, she lived closer to our time than she did to the, when the pyramids were built. Like, it just,
it's true.
But anyway, back to yourselves, I suppose. So where are you going now? Like, you opened up, like you said, could not have been a tougher time there. So you got through those first years, and all businesses, they say, like, the first 3 years are the toughest. So you got through them the first 3 years, and you got through them as the toughest time to possibly open a hospitality type business. So where are you going from here? What's next?
Still trying to survive, man, trying to keep the doors open. As far away as we've already gotten from the initial shock and devastation of COVID, now the virus isn't really as dangerous as it was a while ago, but all of the repercussions of COVID still exist. We're still battling all of the fallout from what started with COVID. And now the beer industry is struggling, for the first time, I think in 23 years, alcohol sales in spirits, liquor, have outpaced beer. Okay. The younger generation is drinking less beer. They're more interested in alcoholic energy drinks and these canned seltzers and all this other stuff that's not beer.
RTDs.
Yep. And one of the fastest growing segments of craft beer in the United States, non-alcoholic.
All right. Yeah.
And one of the fastest growing breweries, craft breweries in the U.S., non-alcoholic. Through COVID, we've battled the rising cost of doing business with the dwindling money. People don't have as much disposable income. In Central Florida, rent has gone up enormously in this area because people are moving to Florida, man. Everybody wants to live in Florida. And that has led to huge inflation in the state. Two of the largest cities in the entire United States with elevated inflation, Miami and Tampa. People's disposable income has fallen, and the margins are getting squeezed in the middle. And we're still struggling. Yes, the virus has passed, but all of the economic fallout and all of the socioeconomic fallout from, the way people go out and spend their time to, how they spend their money. People come in and say, I started working at home, and, when that happened, all I had to do was travel from home to the grocery store and back. I don't drive by the pub anymore. Right. I buy my grocery store at the beer, or I buy my beer at at the grocery store when I'm there. So, you know, people are spending their money differently. And whether you're a big or a small brewery, you're hurting. You know, we talk to the larger breweries around here. Cigar City just laid off 13 people, you know, and they're ramping down beer production in Tampa. Breweries all over the United States close every week. It's a tough time for the beer industry in general. So just like everybody else, we're struggling to keep the doors open.
Right. Well, that's not the greatest note to finish on, but unfortunately, I was hoping if you Houston, give us a more upbeat note there or something. What's your next beer coming out, and then we'll finish.
Some cool things being produced right now. Like I said, the Mavi. We're doing some treatments to our blonde. So orange, bloody orange is coming back. Pineapple Condo on the ocean floor. That's our pineapple blonde. It's a little SpongeBob reference there. So we have that. We have a couple events coming up. We're doing the Eggs and Kegs in July. So yeah, it's lots of fun stuff. I guess my closing would be to tack on to what Tom just said. If you like a brewery, you have a favorite brewery, you like what people are doing, just go out and support. You know, patronize the business, or just go grab some to-go beer. You know, like he said, you know, it's tough out here all over the world in the industry right now. So if you like a brewery, just support them.
Yep, that sounds a much better note, much better upbeat, at least a request. Listen, guys, thanks a million for taking the time. I've held you for way too long, but I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, man.
And thanks, Brian. It was good. It was great. Like I said, not only learning about G, but about ancient Egypt as well. And I mean, if I get to Florida soon, I'll be calling in because I want to learn more and just look at the artwork and. Then we'll get around to discussing the beers. You can tell me all. I'll work my way through the taps. You can tell me because you've got a lot of taps.
We do. We got 24 taps, man.
So that's a multiple visit. It's not one night. So listen, guys. Thanks again. Thanks a million. And
thanks, Brian.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Brian.